Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Steven Sadak.
And we hate movies. Everyone, welcome to We Hate Movies. Thank you for tuning in to the program today. We are kicking off, well, it's Oscar season, you know?
And we're kicking it off in front of a bus. Or was it a car?
It's a car.
Okay.
It's a truck-ish. A truck-ish something or other.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy didn't stop, though.
Oh, man, that guy was going someplace.
We are talking about Taking Lives from 2004, which stars Best Supporting Actor nominee Ethan Hawke. This is while they were actually making Boyhood, he also made this movie. Throughout the course of the production of Boyhood,
I didn't even think of it.
Yet, Taking Lives was made, directed by DJ Caruso, who
did that. What was that movie? The Scary Suburbs,
The Salton Sea,
Suburbia.
Disturbia. First of all,
apologize. Yeah,
Disturbia, which I actually thought was mildly entertaining.
Do you think just the band Disturbed was pissed when that movie came out? Like, fuck, that's our next album title.
Yeah, totally. They had to do a whole lot of like canceled marketing
because they wanted to call it Wah, but they can't. You can't write that out. It's like
so
ooh,
you
ooh,
want to say
ooh
ooh it's like that Chipmunk song.
No, it's cool. It's like ooh Wah.
Were they the Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, gentlemen?
No,
that's Puddle of Mud?
No, that's Puddle of Mud did other stuff. Drowning Pool. I don't know if anybody else knows this, but I was a little bit into the new metal around the time Taking Lives came out.
Eesh. Man, let me tell you something, you guys. Steve Sadak, circa 2002 to 2004, that was a great time to know Steve Sadak. He listened to all sorts of shit no one wanted to hear about.
We used to call him Papa Roach. No, that probably wasn't one of them. That's no Drowning Pools.
So we kick things off in high fashion in this movie. You got a young baby-faced Paul Dano.
Mm.
Yeah, right? Like Little Miss Sunshine is still a ways off.
Yeah.
So he's still baby-faced, hasn't been ruined by the world yet. And you got this goddamn U2 song just bringing everything together, man, let you know. It's the late 80s.
Don't start a movie with U2. It's kind of hard to get on a musical high horse after you just start talking about Drowning Pool and Puddle of Mud. But I like U2 totally fine. It's not a movie starter. You want to put that in the middle of your movie. You want to even put it at the end.
Listen.
Like that Batman Forever song. Now maybe we're talking.
Listen, U2 is a montage-only band.
Yes, exactly.
Okay? It is not a... we're fading in and starting our journey with these characters. I don't want to hear U2. Shut up, Bono.
Because I just heard a bunch of loud previews. You know, I just watched Popcorn Dance. I'm wondering, are we like, did the movie not start and now they're just playing like filler music while they find the reel?
Or there's another trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
U2, also trailer music. They had that, what was that song on the Tomb Raider soundtrack? Was that Elevation?
Yes.
Oh, my God, really?
Tomb Raider or Tomb Raider Cradle of Filth or whatever that, no, that was another band Steve listened to.
Didn't listen to Cradle of Filth.
Cradle of Life, I believe it was.
Yes.
Might be a stay tuned for either of those. Yeah. I saw that first one in the theaters anyways.
No, I never saw either of them.
Yeah, me neither.
Oh, man, that first one is a real stink fest.
I was too busy in line for Mudvayne, man.
You were too busy buying a thicker chain for your chain wallet?
Oh, no. So this is one of two movies, Disproportionate Quality, where Paul Dano plays a disturbed twin.
Yep.
Wait, what else is he a twin in?
There Will Be Blood.
Eli, it was Paul who was the smart one.
Oh, I forgot there was a twin situation in that movie.
Yeah, I do kind of
buffoon.
I want Daniel Day-Lewis to come in at the end and talk to Ethan Hawke. By the way, spoiler alert, everybody, Ethan Hawke did it the whole time.
Ethan Hawke is the person who's taking lives in this movie.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way. Paul Dano grows up to be Ethan Hawke.
Correct.
You figure that out.
it's a real problem. I mean, it's always hard when like you're doing like an only a 15-year jump and you change actors. You should probably not. I mean, again, we always run into that Kevin Spacey, Bobby Darin problem.
That's a real problem. That's a whole that's a feature length problem.
But at the same time, and I get it because again, this is a movie that's built upon a twist, and the twist is Paul Dano is Ethan Hawke the whole time, and you want to know. But also, the other option is what Paul Dano grew up to be
Angelina Jolie,
Kiefer Sutherland. That's yeah. even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there's a 15-year gap between those two people, by the way.
Yeah. So the conceit of this movie is someone is killing people. Ethan Hawke.
Well, they're taking lives.
Well, that's the thing. They're killing someone and then taking over their identity. Mm-hmm.
So Don Draper, if he just kept doing it,
yeah, you're right. If he got a taste for it, he was like, oh my god, Dick Whitman into Don Draper had me hard for a month. Let's see what else I can come up with.
Would have kicked this little kid in front of a bus, or I guess it was more of a car truck. Excuse me.
Turns into Harry Crane, gets all fat.
Oh yeah, just starts talking. Commenting endlessly about how he works in TV.
Yep.
God, he just won't shut up about that.
I love Harry Crane. He's the most annoying character on that show.
So someone is killing people and taking their identities. This serial killer could be called, like, the real loser killer. I mean, because, like, if you're going to kill someone and take their identity successfully, it can't be, like, a family man.
Yeah.
You know, can't be a popular guy around the office.
Yeah.
It's got to be a real loser.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird that you want to just... You know, what's the gain? You never make really a lot of money doing this.
I guess it's just the thrill to kill. And then, yeah, that's rhyming. And then I guess it's just to hide, right? Like, oh, no one's going to suspect if they're not looking for the guy.
Right. So we start this thing off. He's driving down the road, is Paul Dano, and he picks up a dude who's hitchhiking. Is that the idea?
Well, they're both at a bus station. They're taking a bus across country.
Oh, right. And the bus breaks down.
Bummer! Yeah,
they're like kind of like weird street kid hitting on each other a little bit, you know? Like
yeah.
There's a little bit of that going on.
I think there's adventure. A little bit of like feeling each other out.
Exactly. Like if I pull this shit out, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're on a public bus, so that lady will scream.
I don't know, man. Some of the public buses I've been on, I've seen weirder.
I mean, you can't walk around New York for too long on a train and not see somebody's dick. Like, this is
that's
not...
true.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's just
a rite of passage. Listen, the first time you see a publicly exposed penis, man, that's how you know you've made it in this town.
Oh, jeez, I've made it too far.
I don't want to know what that actually means. You've made it too far.
Forget about it.
So they buy this car from some dude because, like, the bus breaks down and they just really have to get to Seattle. And it's so stupid. They're, like, driving in the car and this guy's just like, he's like, yeah, you know, my dad sent me to military school and I did whatever else. And he's like, now I'm going to go to Seattle and write music. And he goes on to sing.
They're
like,
in Canada, by the way.
Right? Are they in Canada?
I think so. The whole movie.
Oh, right, because it's a French-Canadian thriller.
Yes.
Everything about this movie, for some reason, is in Canada.
Right.
Canada.
They're going to go to Seattle. He's going to make it big in music in the 80s. So I guess he's following the early grunge wave out there.
Sure.
But he just starts singing like the dumbest like acoustic guitar blues song.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I've got the Military Academy blues or whatever it is. It's so dumb. And you can see Paul Dano be like, man, that song is so terrible. I want to kill that guy and take his identity.
And they're kind of best buds for a second and they get a flat tire. Because Paul Dano is not looking at the road, just looking at this dude that he's kind of clearly into for a second.
Well, they bought a beater from some weird guy in a shed, so it's gonna fall apart on the road.
Yeah, paying attention to the road or no, this car doesn't have a ways to go.
I want
to
know how these two kids, poor enough to take the bus, and they're running away from home. How are they affording this car?
Well I know. Because Jenna Rollins explains the whole thing. Later in the film, Jenna Rollins is the mother of Ethan Hawke, who's the killer. But when he's a boy, he's played by Paul Dano. She says that when he runs away from home, he stole a shit ton of her jewelry. So he's got, like, jewelry money.
Yeah, and especially Jenna Rollins' jewelry money. That's going to get you far.
Oh, yeah, you could live high on the hog for a year, nigh 2 years on that.
It's always problematic when the best death of the movie happens in the first 15 minutes.
And it's a trailer death.
Exactly. And you're like, oh, man, this is going to be great. And so, like, you know, this kid's changing a tire. He's like, come on, scrawny Paul Dano. You never changed a tire before. He's, like, he's got his ass out in the middle of the road. And, like, this van is speeding down the highway with no regard for anybody. This guy just killed six people, I guess.
I think the Manson clan is in this van. What's left of the Mansons in the late 80s.
So this was actually a courageous act.
He's got the girl from Texas Chainsaw in the back. He's the guy that picked her up at the end of Texas Chainsaw.
Oh,
and Leatherface was running after him. So he's just in a freak out driving mode.
And, you know, whatever, man. He's like, look at that ass. I can't wait to see that ass dead on the side of this road. And as the van approaches, like, he times it and, like, kicks the kid. So the kid falls face first in front of this roaring van tire. And so, you know, you think, oh, wow, he's going to get hit by a car. That's terrible. This car or this van or whatever it is does, like, the craziest flip and explode. It's so out of proportion to what this should be.
His body is flying like he's Mr. Bill.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, like, no!
It's so not accurate. Like, this guy's, like, just 3 feet away, like he got pushed over.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of, like, contorted and whatnot. Paul Dano comes up. What does he do? He, like, beats him over the head with a rock?
Well, that's his thing. That's his modus operandi.
I like to bash people's head in with a rock.
Because that's how he finishes him, you know. That's his finishing move.
There. Right. That's his Stone Cold Stunner.
Yeah. You go. You're 1 foot. You're a flip away from somebody. You do back forward A, and then Paul Dano kills him with a rock.
And so then we cut to the present day. We cut to Angelina Jolie just lying in a grave.
Can we? The opening credits.
Oh, these are bad.
It's 2004. I mean, clearly this is in the mold of Seven.
Yeah,
but
big time.
Yeah. Holy crap, did they just steal these credits from Seven?
It's just like, whoa, man, who would ever need to, like, file down their fingerprints?
Seriously. Now, it's ridiculous. It's like beat for beat things taken from Seven.
Without Trent Reznor. You know, like it's Seven Sands Trent Reznor.
Well, they have what, Philip Glass on this movie? Yeah.
Philip Glass did the score for this.
I cannot believe it.
It's so insane. I wish I knew that when I saw Philip Glass in person like a couple months ago.
So you could heckle him.
I'd just be like, hey, man, hey, I love the Kotze trilogy. What was going on with Taking Lives? Not that the music's bad in this movie. It's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's taking money.
A lot of people were taking money.
Yeah, everyone just taking money.
Except for the ticket taker on opening night. Taking Lives, anybody?
I saw this movie in the theaters opening weekend.
Wow.
Pretty empty theater.
I saw this about a week ago at my apartment. Pretty empty living room.
Your cat refused to come in the room.
Did not want anything to do with it.
So, yeah, I mean, we cut to, it's like these detectives working this, you know, a serial killer case.
They've found a corpse at a construction site.
Yes, it's Olivier Martinez, some other guy, and Checa Cario. Are like and Checa Cario is like, oh, I called. And it's set in Quebec for no reason. I mean, The Quebecois stuff doesn't really matter in this movie at
all. Well, they also got, actual French actors to play
these
roles. People. So it's like the French is not even accurate.
No, it's not.
It's totally wrong accented French. But
I had lunch with a guy from Quebec the other day. And like,
were you talking to him about Taking Lives?
No, I didn't. I forgot to mention that I would be watching Taking Lives in a couple of days. But it's amazing because it's like it's a Wisconsin kind of accent, but everything's got a French tinge to it. So like it'll just be, I'll be talking like this and then I'll just I don't do a good French accent, so I won't do that. But yeah, exactly. Or you have some poutine, and it's like, what?
Yeah, it's just, it's not anything to do with this movie. It's not a trait. It's not a theme. It's just a quirk.
And it makes this movie kind of implausible and inconvenient because she works for the FBI because of Silence of the Lambs, so she has to work for the FBI.
Yeah. Yes. It makes no sense why she would be asked by Checa Cario to come help out with this.
No.
You're telling me there's not one worthwhile Canadian like no. criminal profiler? Not one? I mean, I know the crime up there is much less than what we have, but someone up there has to have studied this shit.
Somebody from Vancouver, you know, like a big city hotshot.
Exactly.
Because I think this actually takes place in Montreal.
Yes.
In and around Montreal.
Well, I would think there's someone in fucking Montreal yes. that could do this. You don't have to bring somebody from the West Coast.
Well, that's Ilmira Martinez's thing. He's like, dude, that sucks. Like, this is my big deal.
Yeah, he's so pissed at Checky Carriou. He's like, you invited not only anyone else outside of this precinct to work on this case, you invited an American FBI agent.
Yes.
And he's got a little bit of a problem with her being a woman.
We'll get to that, too.
Oh man, yeah. And Ethan Hawke's hiding out as this starving artist type.
Uh-huh.
Ugh. And then, you know, I was thinking like about our previous episode about a Montreal art caper canvas.
Sure. Oh, right.
And I was wondering if this is the same cinematic universe.
It might be a shared universe.
Because I think there was an FBI agent in that, too.
There definitely was an FBI agent this in that is, movie. This comes by Gary Busey's gallery.
This is the sequel.
Well, I mean, the thing of it is, it's easy enough to do that because everyone at the end of Canvas is dead. So you don't have to worry about any one of those people popping up or any of the consequences of that.
You're totally right.
Unless you think they go to the airport at one scene and John Rhys-Davies is still fucking decaying on a bench.
Just a skeleton with a really, really baggy sweater on.
And a big hat. And
big fat guy hat.
Mm-hmm.
Some big Greek man chains around his neck. His skeleton neck.
I haunt this airport now. Whoever thought I'd die in Canada?
So it turns out she's a brilliant profiler. She's like laying in the grave and they're like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, now that you've asked me, I'm going to show you 10 different things to humiliate you in this crime scene to make you look like a bunch of idiots who are like your first week on the job or something.
And it's great because like this is at the time when we were at critical mass of like everyone's tired of serial killer shit. Like this is one of the last, I would like to say one of the last ones, but like it took up until Zodiac until people were like, oh, okay, this is kind of fun again. And I mean like serial killers got kicked off the television. You know what I mean? Essentially like they got kicked off the big screen. Now it's all like Criminal Minds and every other SVU episode's got another serial killer in it. And
absolutely.
You got your Hannibal, you've got...
There's a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I will say, 2004, I think, might be the breaking point for serial killers, only because you have this movie, but then you also have, which I think is a definite stay tuned, Twisted with Ashley Judd and Samuel L. Jackson, and that is another ridiculous, useless serial killer movie in the vein of like a copycat kind of thing.
Ooh, that's exciting.
That like Twisted is way more copycat. This is definitely, we're going for a Silence of the Lambs-esque, like, artful serial killer picture with this movie.
I think so is this too, because it's all about like,
that's what I meant. This movie.
Yeah. It's all like strong women, like, you know, being in the, you know, looking at evil and so on and so forth. And wake me up already.
One of my favorite weird things that happens in this movie, and they're trying to like, they do stuff like this to make her look cool and damaged or whatever, is she's got this skull reconstruction going on. Like, you know, they're trying to figure out, like, who this dude was or whatever.
Yeah. For a second, I was like, her skull's fucked up?
No, like, because the bodies keep getting burned and disfigured or whatever.
Right, he's crushing all their heads with rocks. That's his, like, that's what he gets. That's what she says gets him off.
And so she's got the skull reconstruction going on. So she's waiting for that to finish up. So she's at home eating dinner. And the way they do the shot is ridiculous. It's like her sitting at a table eating. And then like it just kind of pans to the right. And the chair across from her just has crime scene photos taped to it.
Yeah.
And this is a thing that goes throughout this movie. Like there's a scene where she's like in a bubble bath. And you're like, oh, relaxing Angelina Jolie bubble bath. Okay. And then the bathroom, there's like bubbles, candles, horrific crime scene photos all over the wall.
She has a nice heartwarming conversation with her mother. And like you just see the Angelina Jolie angle where she's talking to this woman. And she's like, well, honey, you should probably got a husband. And then they cut to the mother and she's got a crime scene photo on her face.
So, you know, we get into the Ethan Hawke pretty quickly here. You know, they're like, oh, hey, we have someone. There was another murder, I think is the deal.
Yeah, and somebody was trying to revive the victim.
Correct. So in comes Ethan Hawke in this interrogation scene. And the thing about why we said this up front, like Ethan Hawke is the killer, because this scene tells you that Ethan Hawke is the killer.
Yes. Yeah.
Because he is doing like the most overdramatic nonsense performance in this scene where he's talking about, like, he gets all defensive a lot of the time. He's like, I tried to save that guy. You're looking at me. I tried to save him. I just had to look at his blood and the blood and blood, blood.
It's basically the police found a guy standing next to this murdered man with his head caved in.
Yeah.
And then the guy's just like, yeah, I didn't see where that guy went. I mean, yeah, it's like, are you kidding me?
He's doing the thing of like, oh, I tried to revive this guy. There was another guy who totally ran away before you got here.
This is what we call white guy talks to the police. Yeah. Because guess what happens if he's not white?
Yeah.
Oh, right. No, that guy is he was just over here. You just missed him.
I was just on my way to Tim Hortons. I didn't see where that killer went. But hey, that guy got his head pretty bashed in.
I want Ethan Hawke to have a Canadian accent in this movie.
Yes.
I think he gets a sorry in at one point. I think there is, oh, I'm so sorry.
It's one sorry too little, man.
Exactly.
It's nothing. It's so nothing in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was the other thing. I forgot that she was with the FBI because the whole time I was focused on, like, where is this Canadian accent?
Mm-hmm.
Where is this Canadian accent? And then it's like, oh, yeah, she's with the FBI. But Ethan Hawke, if he is taking lives in Canada.
Yes.
He's
where
from
is that
Canada.
Accent? Come on with the accent.
That's all I need. It's an easy enough accent to do to fake, or just get a Canadian actor if that's the case, or just don't fucking send it in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah,
no offense, Canada, but we didn't need you for this movie.
I know.
This movie thought it needed you. It didn't have to work out this way. Plenty of other good movies being made in Canada, set in Canada.
Set it in New Orleans. You can even keep the French guys.
Here you go. Great French-Canadian movie I just watched. It's called Mommy. It's fantastic. There's a French-Canadian movie.
I saw another one called Canvas. Great Canada.
So, I mean, this interrogation scene lasts forever.
It lasts forever. Like, Olivia Martinez doesn't get anything out of him. And then, like, Angelina Jolie goes in and immediately starts making fuck eyes at this dude. And it's like, you know what, lady? That's not appropriate.
No, it's not. Their relationship in this is ridiculous.
He's a handsome 2004 Ethan Hawke.
Sure.
Angelina Jolie everyone's looking at her, right? But, like, if you are Angelina Jolie, you have to, like, and even
you know that.
Even Jackie Cario is like, how many drinks have you turned down from dudes in the academy and everything else?
She walks into this room and she's, like, setting him up, like, because she's trying to, you know, because she's an intelligent person. Mm. Not like the people who made this movie and knows instantly, like, there's a good shot Ethan Hawke killed this guy.
Sure.
So she walks in immediately trying to, like, bait him. And they find out that the dude had been, like, partially strangled by some piano wire, you know, kind of stuff. And so they have that in, like, a little baggie, you know. So she comes in and opens this folder and drops the baggie with the wire in it, like, on the floor. And she's like, oops. And he starts looking at it like, was that what was around his neck? No! And it's like, dude, listen, I know you supposedly, like, were just involved in this horrendous murder and you tried to revive this guy and this, that, and the other thing. No one's freaking out that much by looking at piano wire.
The only person that freaks out that much in interrogations is the guy from Seven who fucked the woman to death.
Dude, I talked about that guy for three different conversations today at work.
Sure.
Just putting that out there.
He's in The Guest, and I was like, oh, he's going to do it. He's going to lose it again. Like the whole movie, I was waiting for it. But he doesn't.
He made me fuck her!
Sorry.
So the other thing that's ridiculous about this interrogation scene is he, again, might as well just be screaming, I did it, because he starts yelling like, listen, I'm known to draw. I dabble in doodles. If you give me a pad of paper and a pen, I will draw this person for you and you can go find him. And they're just like, uh-huh.
But they're all like, ooh, what a lucky break. He's going to draw him for us.
We got a lead. This guy's breaking it wide open. Best witness of the century. Canada's man of the year.
And he just starts doodling. And, like, he doodled the guy that he killed.
Yeah. Does he?
Isn't that what?
No. He's drawing Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, he draws Kiefer Sutherland with a beard on.
Oh!
24's Kiefer Sutherland coming up.
That's what, okay.
Kiefer Sutherland shows up in this movie for like 5 seconds to be a patsy.
It's insane.
Yeah, it is.
And this is 2004. Like, you're paying him 24 money at this point to be in this thing.
Yeah, I need, you know, I need at least 24 minutes of Kiefer Sutherland.
Aren't the Sutherlands a Canadian dynasty, though?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, so that's one Canadian actor you have in your movie.
God bless him.
I learned something today.
Like, I just want him to draw, like, John Stockton for no reason. Just, and then the rest of the rest of the movie, they're looking for this Mormon basketball player. I think he was playing the Grizzlies that night. Like...
So at what? I didn't know John Stockton was a Mormon.
Oh yeah, he's a huge Mormon.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, he played for the Utah Jazz and loved it. Please don't trade me. I would like to retire a Jazz.
So then they somehow make their way to a creepy apartment, and this is another. It's a real Seven situation.
Yeah, oh, I don't even know so how it comes. Seven. It's something, 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 something.
I think it's something to do with that doodle.
I think the apartment is actually Seven. And it's on 7th Street.
Number 7, 7th Street.
And it's like, well, you know, it's not creepy raining in Montreal. No. So we'll have this guy. He leaves the shower on at all times.
Where the water is falling down on urinal cakes. A pile of urinal cakes.
What?
So to cover up the body smell.
I see.
Because it's like, that's what, you know, when you pee on a urinal cake, yeah, it makes the, you know, thing melt. And
guess
whatever.
What I'm doing? I'm rounding up every janitor within a 100-mile radius.
Gonna be an APB on John Stockton and any janitor you can find. Yeah.
Because do you think, maybe, just maybe, Ethan Hawke is going to every bar and dive he can find, and he just picks out the urinal cakes?
Oh, that's gross.
Because they're kind of like in like a contained, like a plastic little mesh that you would throw into the urinal.
You're right. It's not just the urinal cake. Yeah. It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
The apparatus that goes along to it.
The urinal cake holder.
Somewhere there's another Canadian cop trying to catch the urinal cake bandit. Oh,
the lowest guy on the totem pole.
Man, I would love to watch the urinal cake bandit movie, though.
Wouldn't that be great if we cut back and forth, and then it's like, oh, sorry, I didn't know these cases are merging.
These like, cases are... Oh, hey, you mind if I help you out on your case there?
Well, that's the SVU rule, where it starts out a sex crime, and then they're like, oh, it's not a sex crime, but they keep working on it anyway.
Like that illegal animals episode of that show?
It's just like, dude, assign another detective. It's no longer your case.
So also at one point, Jenna Rollins wanders into a police station. Is she talking first with Angelina Jolie, or does someone else feel this?
It's another officer, and she's like, I saw my son. He's incredibly dangerous. I thought he was dead.
Yes. So the whole thing with this is, you know, apparently he went missing or something. They found the Paul Dano murder scene. Yes. And they were like, hey, is this your son? And the body was too mangled because of that rock smashing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they, you know, it was, I guess, the 80s and, you know, CSU wasn't, you know, as high tech as it is. So they're like, yeah, that's him. Your son is dead, Jenna Rollins.
Wait, is that a white neck? Yeah, it's same guy. Same difference.
And she's kind of just given the fucking Quint speech. She's given the Quint speech here. She's like, I saw my son. I looked in his eyes. They were piercing. It was like a doll's eyes. Well, Jenna Rollins, why are you doing this impression?
He was part shark, you know.
You got to close those beaches.
That's right. I had an affair with a shark. Gave birth to a half shark, half boy. But so Angelina Jolie is eventually following up with this, where they somehow find out that Jenna Rollins might be able to help out with the case.
Yeah,
I think
somehow it comes through. By the way, in this apartment, there's dead bodies and stuff, and like
a dead body falls from the ceiling.
A drop ceiling, and it's like, whoa, a big scare.
It's totally like the head falling out of the boat in Jaws.
It's the guy jumping up in Seven off the heroin addict that jumps up.
Oh yeah,
that's a big shocker. I think a bunch of shit happens in the South of the Land. Excuse me.
It's the jism thrown at.
Oh my God,
Clarice Starling.
Dude, that's the guy. That's the. I want the Migs movie.
Oh man, the Migs prequel to how he wound up in the insane asylum.
Oh, and that could be the end. Like he's thrown to credits.
It would be like, and it's like splurt directed by Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
The thing is, his MO, he's a UPS guy, right? And he goes and he delivers your package. He's like, oh, you got to sign here. And as you're signing, you know what I mean? He goes, all right, thank you very much. He's like, and here's mine. And he goes for you. And he just throws it right in your face and runs away.
Dude, the title of that movie is called Special Delivery. Colin Miggs Begins.
How many people can you throw semen at before getting arrested, do you think? You think you'd be able to, you think you'd be able to get away with it?
Where are you doing this?
That's, yeah. I mean, all right, let's say Subway.
Subway? Yeah. Oh, one time. You're totally getting arrested.
Yeah, yeah.
You're 100% getting arrested for slinging semen at someone.
But, you know, out here, regular street in Queens, you can get away with one.
Yeah, one to four.
You can't make it a regular thing.
No, they'll find you.
Yeah.
They'll catch on.
You got to change. You got to go to a car park and change cars. Just to keep the heist going.
The perfect crime. Planning it out for months. Your case in the street.
You want to throw semen at somebody, huh? Well, we're going to need 12 guys.
So Jenna Rollins, like, Angie goes to visit Jenna Rollins at her home.
Yeah, it's a creepy old house. And, of course, he was a twin. This is when we find out that he had a twin. And like,
then you're just like, wait a second, evil twin movie.
It's an evil twin movie, and it's like, oh, I favored the son that died, and I got the ugly one. You know, it's like they're identical.
Right, it's like a useless twin movie because the good twin had already deceased.
For years, for decades.
Yeah, just death off screen, unrelated to the murders.
Totally.
Just it's like he choked on a pretzel one afternoon, and that was that.
I think it was a thing where the dead twin was the first taken life. Because what she says in the story,
he was
she's
the
telling
good son.
They went out on a boat, like they were on a lake, like they went out on a boat,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
and only Ethan Hawke came back.
Oh, he talented Mr. Ripley at him, huh?
Yeah, dude. Martin was the only one that came back. That's the character.
And
name.
What came back wasn't human.
It wasn't. It was Ethan Hawke.
But I kind of agree with you, Eric. Like, twins only work when they're both on screen at the same time. You
Do
know
you
what I
think
mean?
There was some deleted scenes or like at least screen tests of like, can we make Paul Dano act to himself? And it just wasn't working right. Like, they maybe filmed that whole flashback, like Paul Dano going out on a boat with other Paul Dano,
right.
and then he hits him in the face with an oar. You know, and then like throws the body overboard, and then he comes back and he's like, I'm the Paul Dano you liked. The bad one's dead.
Dead forever now. But they don't even do a twin switch at the end.
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing. Don't get me wrong. But like, I don't even need them in the same frame. Just have it like be something.
Yeah.
Just like, make it something.
Maybe he wasn't dead the whole time and he comes back and then there's been two of them the whole time.
Right.
Actually, you know, you could tell that Ethan Hawke is the evil twin because he's got the goatee.
You're right. He does have the evil goatee.
So if the other guy came back, it'd be just Ethan Hawke without a goatee.
Clean-shaven Ethan Hawke.
I think that could work.
Hmm.
I think we're halfway to a movie here now.
We're closer than taking lives. I'll tell you that much.
This is a quarter of a movie.
It is, because the whole first hour and 15 minutes is spent lying to you about, like, I swear to God, it's not Ethan Hawke. What are you talking about, Ethan Hawke being the killer?
Dude, this movie is like that kid in high school that was just the worst at lying.
Yes.
You know, if you, like, called someone out on something, what are you talking about? Like, well, why did your voice get so high? What do you mean? I'm not killing people.
The first hour of this movie is your dad saying that he lost all the Christmas presents, and you're like, "Oh, did you, Dad? Oh, I don't know where they went. Oh man, I can't believe we're gonna cancel Christmas. Like, no, obviously you're not."
Like, or it's your dad, and he's just like, "Why? Yes, I did bury the hamster in the backyard. It was a proper Christian burial. Was it, Dad? Yes, it was."
Toilet flush.
Yeah, total toilet flush, man.
But it's
oh, now it's stuck. Plunger noises.
But you know, the only way this is that there's a movie if it's Ethan Hawke. And like, he keeps popping in. Like, Angelina Jolie is getting a drink at a bar by herself. And he just shows up, oh, hey, how's the case going? And it's like, you know what, dude?
Just thought I'd check in on this case. He invites her to like the art show that he has. Also very, Gary Busey in Canvas.
Mm-hmm.
So when Angelina Jolie gets this story, this sob story from Jenna Rollins, she's like, you know, she's suspicious of what's going on. She notices that there's like a door that's hidden behind a table in her house, but she lets it go. And she says to Checky Carrier, like, so what does it take to get a body dug up in this here country I'm in? Cut to this coffin just getting raised, and it's Martin, yeah, the supposedly dead twin's coffin.
Yeah, and then there's a whole bunch of shit about, oh, he broke his arm as a kid, but his arm was never broken, so clearly it's not him. And everyone goes,
right, yeah, they exhumed it. It was Martin Lawrence.
That's where he's been.
It's a big twist, yeah.
I've been stuck in here for years.
My God, the Black Knight's down there.
That's a bad Martin Lawrence movie.
Is that a Stay Tuned?
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's really stupid. He goes back in time and gets to be a knight.
Hey, how about that?
So they dig this up, whatever. It's not him.
Then there's an honest-to-goodness secret passage in Gina Rowland's house. Like that, a passage that's blocked. Is therefore a secret passage, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
You don't need a candelabra that you're able to pull on to reveal a door. Like if you put a bookcase in front of a door, secret passage in your house.
It's definitely a secret passage. And what's hilarious is, first to get the body dug up, she basically says to him, like, what does it take to get a body dug up around here? And then she says, like, well, what does it take to get a search warrant to break into an old lady's house? And he's like, well, it would probably take some time. And, of course, time is not what they have.
Not at all, no.
So he's like, but then again, you are just an FBI agent who has no jurisdiction in this country. I can't tell you what to do and what not to do. Cut to her breaking into this woman's house.
I still think it's illegal to break into people's houses in Canada.
Oh, I'm sure it probably is.
Well, you know, everyone up there is so friendly, they just leave the doors open, you know? You just have to walk in and be like, hello, and if you know, then you can do it. Then you can do what you want. Yeah.
If someone isn't home, you've announced yourself. If someone isn't home in that situation in Canada, are you allowed to just take over that person's life?
Yes, yes. That's yeah. Mm-hmm. They have a code.
I'm the dad now.
That's how they all get along so well. They can just. It's just. That's where we got the idea too, as the killer, right? Because it's just everyone mixing and mingling.
The Canadian open doors policy is what did these people in.
This is one of those scenes where, in retrospect, after you know what's been going on in the movie, at the end of it, it doesn't make any sense. So she goes into the secret passage,
right?
And it's all creepy, and there's little dolls all over. There's a fucking hanging teddy bear.
Of course there is. That's what psychopath kids do.
And there's like a little matchstick men, like stick figures, which actually come up a couple times in the movie. Hey, she found it at the other apartment too.
Right, right. Oh yeah, the creepy little But, like, clean your goddamn house, lady. Don't act like you didn't know about this secret passage.
Did Gina Rowland not even know that was... Was she fooled by the secret passage for, like, 50 years?
Well, I thought the door to my basement was there, but I guess I'm wrong. I guess this house doesn't have a basement.
Fool me once, bookcase. Talk to you later. And she... But, like, what is... At the end of the scene, like, because... The way Angelina Jolie like accesses things is by laying down in places.
Yes.
So she lays down in this like weird cot that's set up there, and Ethan Hawke bursts through Jason Voorhees style and tries to grab her.
I was going to say, like Jason Voorhees himself, these arms burst through a straw mattress.
It is Jason Voorhees, because Jenna Rollins is like, oh, my son. My son went crazy. The other kids never played with him.
The other one drowned in a lake.
Right?
Voorhees. But it's weird, though, because they don't show his face. Yeah. And speaking of Jason, this guy is way bigger than Ethan Hawke.
He's 8'5".
Like, fucking The Undertaker bursts out from under this mattress and, like, scares her and runs away.
I think there's some heavy, like, man breathing.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and I think they got Kiefer Sutherland to do that part. I think that was a Jack Bauer. Do it now, Chloe.
So she gets like thrown to the ground and knocked unconscious. Is that why she doesn't chase him?
No, she just gets like a really bad headache. Like, no, because basically it goes like basically he throws her against a wall and then like she gets knocked into a stone wall in her head and she like tries to get up and goes, no, like it's just one of those, I can't do it.
Not and today,
but what is Ethan Hawke doing there? He's already taken this other guy's life.
Yeah, totally. He's not that guy anymore.
This scene makes zero sense.
Yes.
Unless they were going to try to bring back the twin.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, like that My other son's creepy. Thought he died, and now he lives in the secret crawl space.
But if that's the case, I mean, then Gina Rowlands would know about it. Like, she'd be in on it.
She's in on it. Exactly.
But the end of the movie, it makes it abundantly clear she has not seen this kid in 20 years.
Yep. Yeah, no, exactly right.
Makes no sense. That scene, you know, unless they were, like, making the movie and it was going to always be Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
Right.
And they switched it out.
Yeah, like, what...
Well, this did have like a bunch of rewrites. Our good friend David Ayer did a pass on this guy.
There was like four people that have writing credit on this movie. Bad sign.
Yeah, always bad sign.
Also, a bad sign. Don't rip off Psycho and make this bedroom still like a little kid's bedroom. Come on with that shit. Because also, that bedroom is set for like an 8-year-old boy, not the age that Paul Dano is when he's run out of the house.
Another quick question. So, is there another entrance and/or exit to this room? Because the bookcase is in front of the fucking door again. Close it and like there's some sort of way you put like some sort of hook on the bookcase to push it back?
I think this is like the Tower of the Hand. He could get down to the black cells and into the sewer system and out of King's Landing from here. It's ridiculous the amount of.
Maybe that's what we haven't seen, is he's dug a hole in the foundation to this house. Because you can't use the storm doors. If this basement has storm doors to it, you can't hide down there. Jenna Rollins is going to be in and out of that thing.
Someone dug a hole in the foundation of this movie is the problem. So this is when Kiefer Sutherland shows up. So like she's like flirting with Ethan Hawke and like... Ethan Hawke's like, oh my god, somebody came into my studio and totally messed all my stuff up.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
I just walked around the corner to get a you know, a Tim Hortons, and I came back and it was all wrecked. Sorry to bother you.
It's just this horse shit. Like, well, it appears that someone just messed up my office. See,
how could I be the killer if someone's mussing up my papers?
By the way, here's that box of Tim Hortons that makes my story fit.
I got the receipt from Tim Hortons. It's timestamped.
Why would I mess up my own papers? That doesn't make sense.
I mean, someone's messing with me. This guy's after me. You better pay extra close attention to me.
There's one. So she has to give the scene where like she solves what the killer is doing, right?
Yeah,
so she's pretty confident that it's this, like, the son of Jenna Rowland. So Martin Asher is the name, right?
Yeah.
And we just cut to her, like, in the room, and she's giving the presentation, and it just starts with, Martin Asher is taking lives. I'm like, come on!
Oh, yeah. And she's like, yeah, he doesn't just kill people. He takes their lives.
There is a difference.
Well, the best thing is she calls there's Olivia Martinez and this other cop who is the worst cop in the universe the way he dies. And she's like, hey, other cop, you want to come in early tomorrow? And it's to set up this presentation.
That's pretty low.
But also, like, here's something that I'm just thinking about now, is if, so you know that that's this guy's MO, and like, he takes people's lives and blah, 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 bounces to bounce. If one of your, Ethan Hawke has to be a lead suspect, look into Ethan Hawke. Like, what does his family look like?
Yep.
Give me some childhood pictures. What about, you know, let me talk to an ex-girlfriend that proves you're a person.
Yeah, he it's like he killed everyone before he left town except his mom.
Listen, you are this is speaking to Angelina Jolie's character. You are sort of still suspicious of Ethan Hawke, even though you're falling for him for some reason.
Well, he's wearing collarless shirts this entire time.
Yeah, that gets me too. Mm-hmm. you know that Jenna Rowlands has this connection. You're pretty sure the killer is this Martin Asher guy.
Yeah.
Listen, one of the 1,000 times you hang out with Ethan Hawke in this movie, have Jenna Rowlands closely behind you and be like, look, Angelina's going to go over there and she's going to talk to this dude with the evil villain goatee. Look at that guy and tell me, yes or no, is that guy your son? They never once try to put her in the same room with him. This movie could be 25 minutes long.
It'd be wonderful if it was.
It'd be a fantastic short film from DJ Caruso.
So after all of his papers get mussed up, like, well, this guy is A, obviously not the killer, and B, needs extra protection. So they all like case out his art gallery. He's got a big art show opening. And the one thing I don't understand, like, so Ethan Hawke stole his life, are these his paintings or this guy's or like?
Yeah, I was curious about that too because we never see Ethan Hawke doing any painting.
Well, we know see him drawing, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, anyone could draw Kiefer Sutherland, though.
That's true.
Shit, I could draw Kiefer Sutherland. I can barely draw a fucking flower.
That's part of that like art school program. It's like, you can draw this turtle or Kiefer Sutherland.
Just send it in by mail. For your evaluation.
Draw this casual or Kiefer Sutherland.
I love that the concept of that art school. Cause what they're selling you is
art test.
Yeah. Like you are gonna draw a turtle or Kiefer Sutherland or a flag or whatever it is,
or
right?
Kiefer Sutherland.
And you're gonna mail your picture of Kiefer Sutherland holding a turtle. To some like 90-year-old man.
Yeah. Like, well, I'll just be here evaluating all the sketches.
And you could be creative. It is art. If you want to make Kiefer Sutherland a lost boy, or maybe he's Jack Bauer.
You know what might be extra fun? Something I do when I draw Kiefer Sutherland is I draw him as a lost boy. As Jack Bauer. Can you imagine that, kids? If Jack Bauer was a vampire? All you have to do is do a little caption balloon that says, do it now, next to your drawing. That's step two. That's comic books. You don't want to know about that.
Oh, I don't read comic books. They're made by the devil. I just draw turtles and Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, this is Donald Sutherland. That's going in the garbage. That's the best drawing I've ever seen. But it's of Donald Sutherland, and we're not accepting that.
There's a reason why this art aptitude test has a list of suggestions on the side. Because by suggestions, we mean fucking pick one. I want you to be creative. I don't want you to think outside the box. There's a difference.
I'm only good at evaluating pictures of turtles, castles, and Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, I want this to be real.
Also, if anyone has ever sketched into that aptitude test, weallhatemovies@gmail.com.
I want to know. I really want to know.
Listen, how much of a hard ass is that guy? I feel like he'd be a real stickler.
I think it's like encouraging, but like you need to improve. So send in another drawing of Kiefer Sutherland and a check for $5.
I've got all these $5 checks.
Send them to Happy Dude.
You know, a couple more of these $5 checks and I'll actually have myself a real castle. I might even have a pet turtle.
Gonna write a letter to Kiefer Sutherland and invite him to my castle. Get the trifecta.
Got 24 on season one DVD.
This is when Kiefer Sutherland enters this movie. I mean, so he's...
Yeah. Oh my, you're a work of art. It's like the Mona Lisa's coming at me.
Whoa. Stay right there. Let me get my sketch pad. He's drawing her like it's as good as it gets. Just stand by that open faucet, Kiefer Sutherland. I used to draw my mother this way before she turned into a turtle.
The good thing was, after she turned into a turtle, she extended her life by an extra 75 years. Do you know how long turtles live, Kiefer Sutherland?
I'm going to turn you into a turtle. Turtle Sutherland.
I have a sketch of what that might look like.
Which is actually outside the parameters of my aptitude test. But seriously, fuck it, it's my test.
Listen, I give the test. I can go outside the parameters, not you.
Well, Kiefer, I will sweeten the deal. Like, if you want to live as a turtle.
You ever see that Kevin Smith movie, Tusk? I did that once, but with turtles. That's how I have Turtle Sutherland.
All of your stand-ins have been turned into turtles, Kiefer. I tracked them down after you used them.
And speaking of taking lives, a French-Canadian cop was hot on my heels after that one.
So this movie.
Yeah.
So Kiefer Sutherland shows up to Ethan Hawke's art gallery opening, and like... He knows, I mean, and again, we're jumping to the end because fuck it. Because
sure.
A lot of this stuff doesn't make sense in the context of the scene.
I will be completely honest with you right now before you say anything. I've seen this movie for this show. I saw it way back when it came out. I have no idea what Kiefer Sutherland's relationship is to anyone in this movie.
I had to read it on the internet.
Well, they say it in one line. Basically, they were doing like after Kiefer Sutherland dies, blah blah blah. Like, you know,
this is gnarly car wreck. Well, first of all, he shows up at that art gallery.
Yeah,
and he's just like, I don't know if he actually says, what is Ethan? No, he's like, Ethan Hawke, hey.
Yeah,
he's
going to go up to him, and then like Ethan Hawke's like, that's the guy.
Oh,
and
everyone
runs after him. And he, like, he throws a guy into a plate glass window and then jumps through it with him. And it's like, dude, later in this movie, he's revealed to be an art heist guy. Or not even, like, an art forger.
Oh, he's a Gary Busey?
Yeah, he's a bit of a Gary Busey.
Yeah, he's just like this criminal dude named Christopher Hart. Because if you're going to put Kiefer Sutherland in a movie, he needs to have a handsome name. So Kiefer Sutherland throws himself out this window, and then suddenly, like, he's driving in a car with Ethan Hawke. Like, they're on this.
There's a second dude that he uses as a crash pad, by the way.
Yeah, he throws a guy into the window.
It's a, like, we're going to take you to hell tonight kind of move.
It's pretty awesome.
And, of course, there's a big street fair going on, like,
you know what that is?
It's the same old shit.
It's the world-famous Montreal Jazz Festival.
Oh, just it happened that night. Also, why are you having your art? Why are you having your art opening on the jazz night, dude?
Look, man, a bunch of hep cats go to the jazz festival. They're pounding all sorts of red wine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're skiddly-bop-deeting down the street back to their Montreal apartment. Oh, shit, man. This beautiful art gallery's open. Let's go drunkenly buy some art.
Yeah, they're counting on walk-ins. Very smart.
You know, Kiefer, I always thought you'd be a smart businessman. Keep your art gallery open during a jazz festival.
You know, Kiefer, I was hoping you'd show up to my gallery opening. It was last week. And no Kiefer.
Wrote you several letters inviting you to the opening. The problem is with all of my Kiefer drawings is it's always the same shot of him looking at you, kind of like George Rodriguez's Blue Dog. Over and over again, the haunting eyes. They follow you everywhere, just like I'd hope Kiefer's eyes followed me. If he were to come live in my castle as a turtle. Oh, that picket fence looks pretty sharp. Good going, Sarah.
Why did he never have someone else that he was evaluating? Like, show a student and show how you would evaluate
or
something.
Or, like, you know, what are your graduates like? What's the graduation rate? What do they go on to do?
Two words, folks. Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, right.
Well, Jackson took all of my courses and then lit my diploma on fire and started to do good art. You have to know the rules before you can break them, ladies and gentlemen.
The way he started was spilling paint in the shape of Kiefer Sutherland or a castle.
So, like, oh my God, we know it's Kiefer Sutherland now. We've all seen Kiefer Sutherland.
Right.
And, like, it's a bad red herring because you know what a movie is, but I could see what it is. Like, oh, let's pay a guy who's like a mid-range celebrity that we're not going to have to pay a whole bunch to be in this movie because you know a red herring has to be a name or else it doesn't hold any weight. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Like, Olivier Martinez is not a very successful red herring.
No, exactly. This guy is Kiefer Sutherland. Okay, maybe they hired Kiefer Sutherland to be the bad guy. It's kind of boring that they just revealed him in the middle of the movie, but all right.
Exactly. Like, he needs to be the helpful neighbor from Jump Street. You
yes,
know what
exactly.
I mean? Like, oh, this guy's always hanging around. He's following me everywhere. You know, we are best friends as neighbors go, but now I'm starting to suspect Kiefer Sutherland just might be this taking lives gentleman you're looking for.
So, like,
I could sketch him if you want.
You get this car chase that results in Ethan Hawke crashing the car.
Well, it's great because Kiefer, I think, whatchamacallit, Ethan Hawke has so successfully convinced everyone that he's not the guy that he can actually leave town. He's like, oh, I've got a show in Toronto. And everyone's like, no problem, lead suspect. Talk to you later.
Yes, yeah,
we're going to give you a police escort to the plane. We are so thoroughly duped by your garbage. And this is the worst cop in the world. He's like waiting outside. Kiefer Sutherland breaks into Ethan Hawke's house. And they have this weird, like, flirty scene where he's like grabbing his face, like, I'm going to get what I want out of you.
Oh, yeah. I was like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah.
Like, start kissing him right now.
Yeah,
smelling him anything.
It would have been great if he was actually the killer and he took out a giant rock and bashed Ethan Hawke's face in.
I wouldn't be against it. And, you know, he's like, I'm going to get what I want out of you. And then they start, like, fighting and stuff. And, like, Ethan Hawke's, like, screaming his head off at this cop's like, oh, I better go upstairs and see what's going on.
It's like, why are you even posted there? Like, and it's like, it didn't look like Keith or Sullen had much trouble getting into this place.
No, exactly.
He's,
not at all.
He's totally dry. He's well manicured.
So that cop gets murdered.
He just gets shot a couple times because you don't know see what happens. And then all of a sudden, they're on the road in this super high speed car chase. And like Eric said, again, Ethan Hawke's doing this for his own benefit. After we find out after the fact, and Ethan Hawke is such a good bad driver, he's able to drive just that side of the car into something. You know, yeah, what I mean? To kill him.
It's insane. Like, there's no way he's pulling this off. Also, oh my God. You know what this movie doesn't earn or deserve or need is a high-speed car chase. Mm-hmm. Like, you're so desperately trying to be something like Silence of the Lambs. You know, there's no car chase in Silence of the Lambs, right? Like, Anthony Hopkins doesn't get in some Corvette and just speed away.
I wish. Although, you know, I wouldn't be against it.
Jodie Foster's like, I'm coming after you. It doesn't happen.
Oh, it's a great, like, three-person car chase. They're driving, and, like, they get stuck at a red light, and they're, like, looking at each other, and then Ted Levine's like, oh, no, and he's on a motorcycle.
Yeah, it's like Wacky Races. And then and Hannibal is, like, guiding. He's like a backseat driver to Starling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott Glenn's in the other car with this funny dog.
Anthony Hopkins has to be like, he's got his blinker on, but he's going the other way.
Boy's going to signal right, probably going to turn left. Look out for that one. He's smart. Kiefer Sutherland's just dead.
He's in this movie for 4 minutes. He's got lines of dialogue.
Yeah. He goes right through the windshield, and then Ethan Hawke's like, oh, he was the killer! And he takes out a gun and starts shooting this lifeless corpse.
What in the wide world of sports are we doing
and
in this movie?
Angelina Jolie's running down the highway going like, can you stop? Stop shooting random things. And now the car's exploding.
Stop shooting that corpse. Oh, that's right. Yeah, the car blows up.
That's his thing. He wants to defigure him to such a degree to fool his dirty mother.
Right? And again.
The dirty old battle axe is out again.
White criminal privilege. He's waving a gun at this cop, firing it. Like,
oh, totally.
You try. Like,
please stop that.
I mean, you're just a suspect, so I wouldn't fire on you, but really, you should stop immediately.
So then we're at the morgue, and they bring Jenna Rollins down. Yeah. And they're just like, all right, Jenna Rollins, like, come in. There's one area that's not horrendously burned by that car fire.
Well, the corpse was so burned terribly. How about if you look at this picture that I drew? One of the thousands of pictures of your son.
Would you say that this is your son riding a dune buggy? Would you say this is your son in a fun sun hat on the beach? Would you say this is your son as a baseball all-star?
Oh, no, I opened the turtle folder. Hold on, I got to get the Kiefer Sutherland folder.
Have you ever seen a turtle dressed up as a baseball all-star? It's pretty funny.
I mean, and she's like, oh, I guess that's my son. How do you fuck that up twice, by the way?
She is terrible.
No, I think this scene is she's
inspecting the corpse and, like, touch, like, opening the eye to see what the son's eye
because she
like.
Says the whole thing is like she would never when she spots him at the beginning of the movie she's like I would never forget those eyes, he had these like piercing eyes. So I guess she looks at Kiefer Sutherland's muddy lifeless eye and is just like nope.
Oh, Martinez is just like telling her not to touch the corpse.
Oh, that's right.
And she's like, I will touch whatever I please.
I will pump the brakes on this because we've gone too far ahead and we've skipped past the sex scene, which is the most important thing of this entire movie.
Did that fucking happen already, dude?
Well, the fucking did happen 11 years ago.
the night that Kiefer Sutherland dies, everyone gives fucking Ethan Hawke a medal. Like, great job, dude. Oh, you solved our case for us.
Totally.
Jackie Cario pats him on the back, and they give and Ethan Hawke and Angelina Jolie give each other this look like, you know what's up now, right?
Yeah.
And to sex.
He just, like, walks over to her and exposes her breasts. And it writes itself.
Well, also, she's at home alone.
Yeah.
Just like looking through crime scene photos. That's what it is, because the case is solved. Yeah. So she's taking down all the photos. There's a little rat-a-tat-tat at the door. And she opens it, and he's just standing there staring at her. Like,
right. She resisted his charms to this point. Now the case is over. She thinks she's free to fool around.
He's no longer a suspect or a witness or whatever.
Sure.
Let's get down to fucking.
Now we're just two ships passing in the night, man.
And let me tell you something about this sex scene. This sex scene is an unbalanced sex scene, because you have a completely naked Angelina Jolie.
Yep.
And Ethan Hawke barely unbuttons his top button. Like, it's just fly down and that's it. His shirt is on. I think it might still be tucked in.
Yeah.
And she's just like straddled on this table, just completely fucking naked. Like, what? Why? For who? Why is this all of a sudden?
Well, for who? I'll tell you.
Thank you so much for including that scene in your movie. Really helped my sketches.
I just wish that was Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland and Ethan Hawke going at it.
That's my slash fiction.
If Kiefer Sutherland was flinging his arms around fucking naked and Ethan Hawke was buttoned up, oh boy, I could sketch that.
Find all my stories on artappraisals.tumblr.com.
But it's so out of left field. It's so unnecessary. The nudity is so unnecessary. And it just goes on and on and on and on.
It's undeserved.
There's no other sex scene ever in this movie.
There's nothing else sexy about this movie. No. Then suddenly you swing for the goddamn fences. What the hell am I watching?
And this is the 1 second, because Kiefer Sutherland's dead, and like you look at the timer, you're like, there's 30 minutes left, and then like now you're like, of course it's Ethan Hawke, but the movie tries to throw one more fucking curveball at you, and Olivia Martinez is like trying to get Angelina Jolie before she leaves, but she's too busy having sex with Ethan Hawke.
Yep.
And he's in the lobby of her hotel, says, oh, I'll talk to her tomorrow, and then he like leaves one of those little straw men behind, and it's like, oh my God, he might have did it. No, he didn't, because he's been talking to Gina Rowlands the whole fucking movie. It doesn't make any sense.
It's so stupid. It's like, why would you have him leave that?
Yeah,
right? Exactly. It's like, oh, you know what'll be so funny? I'll leave a trinket from that horrendous serial killer case that we just solved. She'll think that's real hysterical.
So she has sex with him. She wakes up the next day covered in blood because he's got this. And this leads to the grossest line in any movie.
Oh, yeah.
So she wakes up covered in blood. And it's like, oh, my God. And you think it's a nightmare. You don't know what's going on. Maybe he killed somebody. Maybe Ethan Hawke's dead.
Right.
But, like, he has this wound on his arm from the car accident that opened up. So they go to the hospital. And the doctor's like, oh, the stitches are all busted. You really opened it up last night. And they share this look like, oh we were opening it up, baby.
Dude.
We were opening it up all night long.
Split me like a wishbone he did. Like, dude, this look that they exchange, you know, each other. And then what's amazing is while he's still like probably bleeding a little bit and then in pain, the doctor's like, well, I have to go get something. I'll be right back. And they're just like, yeah, you fucked me so hard. Your stitch is ripped, huh? Yeah, let's start making out in this emergency room. It's like so disgusting.
It's like, I'm so convinced you're not the killer. I will fucking kiss you in public.
Listen, you got what you wanted out of this guy. You're not going to settle down in Canada with a starving artist. Which you just
no.
You did the deed. You dropped him at the hospital. Grab your Hortons on the way to the airport and get the fuck out.
That is it.
Yeah.
Doesn't he? Correct me if I'm wrong, because I watched a lot of stuff this weekend. Like we had the snowstorm, so I was just like watching movies. Is it not in this movie where he's also like, well, you know, there's a lot of art gallery space back in America that I could rent in D.C., right?
Yeah, he says that. And like, she also drops that she's from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, because that's really important to the end of the movie. She's like, by the way, I'm from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
And yeah, he's basically just like, oh, you work at the FBI, huh? Well, the FBI's in Washington, D.C. There's also art galleries there. Yeah. And I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'm like, you're entertaining this?
This is before they even fuck, also. This is like when they're just like, maybe. And so Gina Rowlands realizes it's not him, and she freaks out. And she like goes, she's so distraught, she has to take the elevator by herself. And whoops, Ethan Hawke's there. And he's like, hello, mother. And it's the same thing all these bad thrillers do is,
is hello, mother.
Yes. And then at the end of the movie, he cannot talk like a person anymore. He talks like a villain.
Yes.
This is my real voice. I am a bad guy. He's all like, oh, hello, I'm so crazy now. And yeah. I can't even imagine talking normally. And it's like, shut up.
It's why does your Ethan Hawke, if you're listening, why does your serial killer voice have to sound like a bad Kelsey Grammer impression?
But that's the thing is he blows it, by getting too close to Gina or whatever. But he's taken those lives. He's now exonerated his actually like...
Yeah,
you know, like
we know, Kiefer Sutherland's charged with all those crimes,
right?
And
just
he's dead.
Move the
take
fuck
a new
off.
Life.
Yeah,
no, because you guys, he fell in love.
Oh, that's right.
That was the one factor he couldn't account for in his taking lives situation, because he never gets close to anybody in the rest of these lives.
You know why? That's it. Because you didn't. That's why this movie starts with a U2 song. Is because it's a little bit romantic. Just, you know, it's always just a little bit romantic.
Yeah. Now, what I don't understand, and I guess the only explanation is he's caught in the act at the beginning of the movie, because why else would he insert himself into this police investigation?
Yeah, I think
you know what I mean?
Yeah, he just slipped up this one time, and then like he said, oh, I just found this guy in the street. I was trying to give him mouth-to-mouth I was.
You know what? Also, if that's what's going on, why not just bounce?
Yeah.
Like, take another life.
Yep, exactly.
Get out of there. Go up to the Northern Territories or maybe somewhere over in Saskatchewan. Start over, baby.
So he kills Gina Rowlands.
In this elevator, just like stabs her to death.
And like Angelina Jolie's like waiting for the elevator because she wants to talk to Gina Rowlands. And like the door opens, there's blood everywhere. And Ethan Hawke's like, see you later.
Yeah.
And he leaves and she's like totally humiliated professionally. And
oh, ruined.
And, you know, everyone's pissed at her. Checky Cario's yelling at her. Olivier Martinez slaps her in the face.
Just a big open palm Vince McMahon slap in the face.
I mean, because he hated her to begin with and she's kind of sort of responsible for the death of his partner, who was his best friend.
Right.
She is,
I mean, it's still wrong.
Her sexual desire for Ethan Hawke has led her astray throughout this whole investigation.
Dude, that's why. I mean, what this movie's telling you, man, is like premarital sex is a sin. Look what it got her. Look what lust got her.
Mm-hmm. This is like a Jason movie, right? It's a slasher. You punish the promiscuous.
Totally.
So Ethan Hawke somehow gets on a train and takes somebody else's life, and he has like this.
Now he's on the Orient Express. What's going to happen next?
He takes some dude's life, and we find, you know, and that's the other thing like that sucks is like, when you hide the serial killer for this whole time, you don't get to see him be a serial killer.
Exactly right. I mean, that's what freaking Silence of the Lambs was so amazingly brilliant about.
Yes.
It's like, you're with this dude the entire time. Mm-hmm. You're watching him making the skin suit. You're watching him take the victims. You're also hanging out with another totally awesome serial killer.
Sure.
You know, like, it's doing these things right. Like, this whole mystery element is so unnecessary for this movie. Like, you know how Taking Lives is a good movie? If he is bouncing from life to life and they're chasing him
and
he keeps changing identity, maybe this movie lasts over a span of several years.
And you could do, like, it's like an evil The Fugitive.
Yeah.
He's, like, living in some weird Polish lady's basement. And, like, you know, she's dyeing his hair and he's murdering people and he's bouncing. Now he's living in, like, a Czechoslovakian lady's basement. And he's, like, killing people and, like, going into parades.
And then the beginning of the movie, which rips off Seven, the credits, he's putting on dentures and he's, like, he never does that in this movie. He, like, puts on a hat.
It's, like, if
that's
you
how
ever...
taking hats is what he does. I'm going to kill this guy and take his hat.
If you ever wanted an excuse to just use silly disguises,
like,
you know,
on.
If you cast Johnny Depp in the Ethan Hawke role, I guarantee you he's insisting on disguises.
Oh, fake noses? You love silly putty.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's taking this role for a walk.
Absolutely. And that's what this needs. If you're going to do this, I need to see him take a life, take over a life.
Many different lives, preferably.
Exactly. This movie stretches 15 years.
Yeah.
It's like Zodiac. Yeah. Like, you see them all get older. Angelina Jolie, maybe she's married at the beginning. Like, she's so obsessed with the case, right? That, like, her marriage falls apart, like, somewhere halfway through the movie because just years are ticking by. Her kids grow up. She still can't find this guy. You know what I mean?
She keeps fighting Ethan Hawke-esque kind of people working at various blockbusters and things.
She accidentally stumbles on Kaiser Soze. Oh, not you, sir. No, I'm looking for another gentleman.
Carry on, Kaiser Soze.
And, you know, like, so he's, like, talking to her like the Riddler on this train. And he's like, oh, you never even guessed who I was. And it's like, oh, shut up.
Oh, I forgot there's a cell phone call.
Yeah, of course there's a cell phone
call. An 11th hour cell phone confession.
And, like, you know, she's on keeping on the line to, you know, to track him. And that goes to nothing because they can't find him. And she she goes back to America, gets fired all to hell. It's great because I was so excited. I was like, if she isn't really professionally humiliated by what is the worst thing a detective can do.
Yep.
This movie's bullshit. Yeah. She gets fired. She gets good and fired.
And then we cut to like sometime later. I believe it's unspecified.
Yeah, it is unspecified. You tell by the next scene. But
so it's like Angelina Jolie, she's like in a store. She's like getting some things, you know.
She goes to the post office.
And it's like they're being very careful about how you see her, you know, until she goes, yeah, it's not a store. It's the post office. When she turns to exit the post office, it's revealed she's got a belly bump, you know, baby bump.
And I was like, what is this, Degrassi Junior High? Everybody gets pregnant the first time they have sex. Dude, like, really, does that need to happen?
Maybe because the other thing is, we didn't see it, but that, like, suture-tearing lovemaking that was going on, like, I think it was more than what we saw.
Well, she does say, you came inside me, or he says, I came inside you.
Geez. Oh, man.
Too much info.
Those kinds of lines in movies, yeah. I don't need it, man.
No, I don't need it.
I'd rather it flung across the room.
Exactly. I would rather Biggs just indiscriminately throwing it at people.
Like in Boogie Nights when Julianne Moore's like, you can come in me. I'm fixed.
Or another version of that is Cameron Diaz in Vanilla Sky. I swallowed your cum. That's got to mean something.
Dude, I don't know if I've ever told this story before on the show.
Here we go.
I can tell this one. Oh, this is great. So when Cameron Crowe's Vanilla Sky remake came out, I was working at the multiplex at the time, you know, and it was like a small staff. So during the week, I was the projectionist, but then it was like, oh, there's two people that have to restock the concession stand. Could you go around all the theaters, make sure the volume's okay, air conditioning, all the quality control stuff. So I'm walking around all the theaters and I get to the Vanilla Sky Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a Tuesday or something like that. It's the late show. There's two people in this theater, and it's clearly a mother and a daughter. And I'm just like, flashlight, doo-doo-doo, you know, walking through. And I'm walking up the aisle right as Cameron Diaz is saying that, I swallowed your cum, like right before they get in the car accident. And I just look. And the teenage girl looks at me like, oh, fuck. And then the mom is sitting there just going, what are we watching? Dude, it was so uncomfortable. The three of us were just like, ew.
Glad you shared that moment with everybody.
Like, I just wanted to, like, go upstairs, stop the projector, run down, like, turn the lights on and be like, okay, let's just talk about this. Can we all agree this was the worst thing to happen to us all day?
Oh,
it was
man.
Horrendous.
That's awesome.
So she's got this baby bump.
She's got a baby bump. You know, it's like, oh my God, she's pregnant. And she's also got like two cribs because obviously it would be twins.
Because twins.
That's how twins work, you know?
Yeah, twins beget twins.
That's right. And there's going to be, she's going to splatter one on a rock when she figures out which one's evil.
And of course, Ethan Hawke shows up and like sits her down. And, like, she goes under the table to reach for her gun, but he's already gotten it. He's like, I've gotten all the guns you've been hiding in the house, which is hilarious.
And he's talking about, like, it's twins. I knew it would be this, that, and the other thing.
Going on all about this exposition.
Yeah, he's been watching her for months, mm-hmm. this, that, and the other thing. And then he fucking stabs her in the baby bump. And you're like, no, wow.
Yeah,
and this just got totally extreme. Killing babies.
The Skip Woods did a pass on this script for a second. But no, this is how she gets him. It was a fake baby bump the whole time.
Oh, yeah, totally, dude. She, like, takes this thing off and just, like, pulls it up, like, nope, drops it. You can see, like, the little, like, stab wound in it, too, and everything. Then she just shoots him to death?
I forget.
No, she takes the scissors and stabs him in his stabs her in the baby bump with scissors. She goes down like, "Oh, I totally lost my babies," and he's like, and then she grabs the scissors and stabs
him in
the heart.
That's right.
By the way, this movie is so memorable. Both me and Andrew in that moment had forgotten how it ended, how he was murdered,
how the one true villain dies.
Cause, because this movie takes so long to get where it's going. I didn't give a crap.
I mean, this epilogue is so long. Like, the parlor scene between the two of them, they exchange a really uncomfortable kiss, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, she's at the beginning of this whole situation, she's trying to play it like, oh, I'm happy to see him kind of a thing. And they really do have this gross, like, she doesn't want her mouth to touch his mouth, but he's, like, down to start kissing. And it's just like,
They're both actually pretty good in this movie for the most part.
Pretty
I guess.
Good looking.
They are pretty.
I think she's fine in this movie. Dude, that interrogation scene, he's terrible.
No, he's not very good. No, I'm sorry. She's good in this movie.
She's good. Jenna Rollins is fairly good in this movie.
I mean, that's the end of the movie, and it's like, she calls Checky Cario, and she's like, it's done. And he's like, oh, thank goodness.
I had not heard from you in so long. I was starting to get worried. I was like, shut up, dude. Why would you be in on this?
Oh, hey, just so you know, remember how you came up here, and I hired you, and then you fucked that criminal? I am now unemployed. And my family's on the street. Suck la blue.
I am so glad you got your man. I am eating out of trash cans.
Thank you for calling me at the homeless shelter.
To let me know your case was wrapped up.
I was thinking about this, though, when I thought she was pregnant. And I was like, oh, dude, like, if you get pregnant in Canada by a serial killer, can you get that abortion for free? Like, can you go back up?
Ooh, yeah. You know, they got Obamacare, I think. Sure, yeah.
They've got Obamacare, like, times two up there, bro.
Whoa, double Obamas.
They've got so many Obamacares up there, it's nuts.
Dude, ironically, double Obama is actually a slur, like down in some southern state. We had double Obama on you, motherfucker.
Oh my God.
I think that's a thing.
And then they flung a beer can at your head.
A bunch of rednecks say double Obama on you. And they're like, whoa, man, take it easy. Throwing the O word around. It's a Klan rally, not a frat party.
Which one was which?
And that's it. We also go out on a U2 song.
Of course.
And I don't think it's the same U2 song.
I forget.
It's U2's I Don't Care.
It's too much U2.
No, U2's I Don't Care is called Vertigo.
I don't know, man. It might be called Elevation.
It might be called that whole album. It
might be called the 2000s.
It might be called the last 30 years.
Dude, I heard that news report that, like, Bono was in a bicycling accident and he, quote, may never play guitar again.
Did you hear what The Edge said about that incident?
No. Well, what Andrew Jupin said was, I'm all right with that. What did The Edge have to say?
Dude, The Edge let it out, dude.
What did he say?
Ooh. Because people were like, well, why didn't, if Bono, like, broke his arm so severely in, like, middle of New York City, like, how did no one take a picture or the paparazzi didn't get to him? And The Edge apparently said that when Bono bicycles around New York City, he does it disguised as a Hasidic Jew.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Like a big coat and the curls or something.
And,
like,
then he's just on a bike?
Yeah. And then I guess people leave him alone.
That's awesome.
I don't know. You know, listeners at home, The Edge may have been pulling our legs, but I think it's true. I think this is happening.
Oh, man. Would anybody recommend taking lives?
No, there's nothing here. And I mean, like,
Well, there's one scene. I'm joking.
I do think that, you know, Ethan Hawke is not, like, one of those guys that just because he's in a movie, it's guaranteed I'm going to like it. Actually, almost kind of the opposite. I just feel like he hasn't had a lot of movies that I've really enjoyed.
I mean, I'm trying to think.
I think he's good, and I think he's fine. I just don't know, like, oh, man, all the Ethan Hawke movies. I'm going to have an Ethan Hawke film festival tonight.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, I'm trying to think of non-Richard Linklater projects that I think he's truly fantastic in.
Yeah.
I'm in that camp that Gattaca's a good movie, but I don't know how much of that is Ethan Hawke necessarily.
Right. Yeah, I kind of like that movie, too. I mean, he's done mostly, especially lately.
Yeah.
That
Daybreakers is wretched.
The Purge.
Daybreakers. What's that?
That's a vampire movie with him and I think somebody else. Willem Dafoe's in it.
Oh, yeesh. Yeah, no, I didn't see that.
It's like Vampire World, the movie. It's stupid.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do remember that now. It's one of those, like, everybody's a vampire.
There's, like, blood coffee and stupid shit like that.
Yeah, totally.
Purge he was in. He didn't show up for Purge Anarchy.
Getaway, previous episode.
Getaway's terrible. He didn't show up for Purge Anarchy because he got murdered at the end of Purge.
Oh, shit.
Dude, that movie has some of the dumbest twists and turns you'll ever see in your life.
I don't like Reality Bites. I rewatched it. I was just
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's one of those movies that I think, like, I haven't seen it since the good old days.
Yeah.
But... You know,
I think your cynical heart can't take it anymore.
I don't. I think it would. Yeah, it wouldn't work out. But like at the twilight of high school, you're watching Reality Bites, thinking like, yeah, man, yeah.
No, your heart's too cold.
It steered me wrong. I should have been going corporate like Ben Stiller. Fucking make something of myself.
If only you knew. Mm-hmm. Here, look what happened.
Yeah, I'm just fucking sitting around, drinking beers, drawing Keith or Sutherland pictures, going nowhere like Ethan Hawke.
That's Taking Lives from 2004, directed by DJ Caruso. If you want to get a hold of us, check out our website, whmpodcast.com. Follow us on Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at WHM Podcast. Right into the mailbag. We all hate movies at gmail.com. What is your opinion about some non-Richard Linklater starring Ethan Hawke films?
Do we think he's going to win the Oscar? We should probably say that, right?
I think J.K. Simmons has got this wrapped around his little finger.
Wow, you think so?
I do now. I've changed my opinion. Yeah.
It makes sense. I mean... It depends. If they're really pushing for Boyhood, you know what I mean? Like, I think it'll be good. Or if they just want to give something to Boyhood, they would give him that.
I think they're going to give it to Patricia Arquette.
She should win in that category. That movie is hers.
But, like, the more I think about Whiplash, the more and more I like it, I think.
I mean, and talking about that, that is J.K. Simmons' movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing else in that movie.
I'll be thrilled if he wins. I mean, I'm middling Hawk, but, I think he's really good in that movie. And he would deserve to win if he does, but... I think that I'd like to see Simmons.
Let me tell you the other thing about J.K. Simmons winning this, too. What a feather in the cap of character actors everywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, exactly. I mean,
to have, like, a seasoned veteran character actor go on to win an Academy Award, that's kind of like my dream for Ernie Hudson.
Yeah.
Or Daniel Stern. That's another one of my Oscar dreams.
Oh, my God.
I know, dude.
No, I mean, but
keep dreaming.
It's the Oz thing, man. That's kind of exciting.
It is.
You know, and you never thought he was going to do it. He was so good on that show for so long. You know what I mean? And he's done a ton of great little performances. He's great as J. Jonah Jameson, etc.
Academy Award winner Vern Schillinger.
Exactly. Oh, you think Beecher's going to take him out at the ceremony?
I think that might happen, dude. They're going to start trying to reenact some Hamlet. So clue for next week's episode, we are doing the Best Supporting Actress category, and we will say...
Patricia Arquette.
So Patty Arquette next week on We Hate Movies. Until then, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Steven Sid.
Take it easy.